So a question is often and reasonably asked, after 400 years of slavery in Egypt, why did it take the Israelites another 40 years to reach the Promised Land? We know that it surely wasn't the most direct route. Torah tells us this. Now, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the Philistines, although it was nearer. God said, the people may have a change of heart when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led them roundabout by the way of the wilderness at the Sea of Reeds. Well, sure enough, as we see in this week's Torah portion, Shalach Lecha, God's intuition was spot on. Moses, as the story goes, selects one leader from each of the 12 Israelite tribes to scout the land of Canaan, the Promised Land. And here's the report from 10 of the 12 tribes. Yes, the land indeed is flowing with milk and honey, with clusters of fruit they carried on their shoulders. There's some of that fruit right there. However, the people, they report, are powerful. The cities fortified and large. We saw the Anakites, the Amalekites, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites. In other words, they didn't think they'd stand a chance. They went on to say, we can't attack it, and we would be devoured if we did. They saw giants and said, we look like grasshoppers to ourselves. Only Caleb and Joshua, two of the tribes, stood tall, insisting that the Israelites would gain possession of the land and overcome it. 10 of the 12 scouts declare, Lo nuchal la'alot, we cannot attack it. And the literal translation of this is, we cannot Allah, we cannot go up. Allah is making aliyah to Israel, being called up for an aliyah. In other words, those 10 of the 12 tribes couldn't rise to the occasion to do what was required to fight for the vision of a promised land. Well, this is a photograph taken on April 11th, 1909. It captures the gathering of 66 Jewish families who would found Tel Aviv through a creative lottery using seashells. Plots of land were allotted on this desolate sand dune. According to legend, the man standing apart from the group is Shlomo Feingold. He opposed the idea of building this crazy city, allegedly telling others, are you mad? There's no water here. Nobody would say that to anybody in Scottsdale, Arizona. So think about this. After 2,000 years, after the expulsion from the land of Israel by the Romans, in this photograph, there is one naysayer, as opposed to 10 out of the 12 tribes, and it's now the voice of Caleb and Joshua that actually represent the majority of these families saying, we can do it. Well, there is a Turn the slide, Rabbi. Amongst those competing for a plot was Mayor Dizengoff, the ardent Zionist and successful businessman from Eastern Europe who would go on to be the first mayor of Tel Aviv. When he died in 1936, his home on the original plot of land that was bid in that picture, Dizengoff's home, would turn into the city's first museum. And as the story goes, on May 14th, 1948, David Ben-Gurion, the preeminent leader of the Jewish community, formally proclaimed the establishment of the State of Israel and was the first to sign the Israeli Declaration of Independence. Ben-Gurion chose Dizengoff's former house. And this is a photograph taken just about 2 weeks ago of the brown statue of Mayor Dizengoff riding a horse on Rothschild Avenue in front of, and it's now being renovated, his former home, now Independence Hall. And that is Al and Sandra Barkov's daughter, Kim, taking a picture of me taking a picture. And this is that sand dune today. I mean, you look at that sand dune, you look at where the Declaration of Independence in Dizengoff's house and Tel Aviv today. It's just remarkable. And although I knew what I was going to say tonight, I am somewhat left speechless, really. And there's a bitter irony also in the modern state of Israel. After 2,000 years of exile, we know well, leaving our home, making our lives in the diaspora outside of Israel and other countries, some that gave us the opportunity to thrive, and we should be reminded that Jews in the Middle Age thrived under Muslim rule. It was a golden age for us. The point being, we know what it's like to seek refuge in other countries. Well, Israel, as we know, is a democratic Jewish state. Indeed, there is a tension and challenge to uphold the democratic vision clearly articulated in the Declaration of Independence. Yet how we do this, remaining a majority in the country, is complex. So this is one of the stops on our trip. It is in South Tel Aviv. It's a nonprofit organization called Kuchinet. Kuchinet is an organization of Eritrean and Sudanese refugees forced to leave their home countries, migrated to Israel via Egypt. Egypt, in this case, just like our Mexican border to the south. Many seeking asylum, survivors of trafficking and torture. And when they arrive in Israel, they are understandably vulnerable, impoverished, lacking health care, navigating a new language and a new culture. Kuchinet, in the Eritrean language of Tigrinya, means crochet. So this is an NGO, a non-governmental organization for arts and design that provides economic and social empowerment to hundreds of African refugees, women, families living in South Tel Aviv. But before hearing one of the refugee story, we got to experience a familiar likely universal custom of getting to know one another through food and drink. So Mike Spoci, who is here with us with his bride, Patrice, tonight. Mike, just kind of wave your hand so people can see you. Mike got invited to cut the first piece of bread. And I believe in Eritrean culture, that honor goes to the elder in the community. So, Mike, you were much more than our elder on the trip, and yet this was your honor. And indeed, an honor it was. And then there's the pouring of coffee. We did not hear this woman's story, but all of us there, all of us could feel the story just from this woman's posture and seeing the dignity that was returned to her from us seeing her, from her having a purpose through Kuchinet. And this being there, the two women here, Lindsay, the white woman from America, a staff person who made Aliyah, and is inspired by these African women seeking asylum. And the woman talking, Tati, an Eritrean woman who told her story to us, her story of having an infant child on her back on foot from Eritrea. Look at a map south of Egypt. You have Sudan, south of Sudan, right on the Sea of Reeds, the Red Sea, is Eritrea. And in her talking about a journey that none of us could ever imagine, and for her to have the courage to tell that story was in itself quite remarkable. And this too, a part of Israel's story, as immigration is a part of every country's story. But I do want to end with this remarkable place in Old Jaffa. It's called Na Lagat, which is the Hebrew for please touch. Now, when you hear Na Lagat, please touch, something doesn't seem right, because we're more accustomed to, in the English, please do not touch. So what is this place? This is a one-of-a-kind non-profit cultural center that represents a meeting place between deaf, blind and deaf individuals together with the general public. So please touch. If you've ever watched a blind and deaf person communicate if you've ever watched somebody communicate with a blind and deaf person, they do it by touch in their hand. Na Lagat. And their mission statement reads, "We believe that all of humanity is equal and that we have to accept responsibility for each other to help contribute to society." So first, we were served a meal at Na Lagat by deaf waiters, prepared by deaf chefs. I, some years ago, experienced their blackout cafe, that you go into a completely black restaurant, dark restaurant. You cannot see your hand, served by blind waiters. In this case, we were taken through, it was just a wonderful opportunity. And I wish I knew the names of these beautiful staff people at Na Lagat that were taking us through a workshop as so that we could understand their world a little bit more. Thinking of the 10 of the 12 scouts who lacked the self-esteem, feeling like they looked like grasshoppers, Na Lagaat strives to instill self-esteem by not only having work and a purpose for those deaf, blind and deaf, but being seen, heard, and felt on their own turf. It was a remarkable, remarkable evening, and you can just experience what we experienced through a few photographs. And then quietly, quietly clapping together as at the end of this wonderful, wonderful evening. So the story of Israel and the Jewish people has always been one of living in the land and or living in the diaspora. Each return, as currently Israel at 75 years of return, we strive to balance between our particular Jewish rituals and culture and honoring the rituals and cultures of all people in the land. So finally, on a quiet morning, Nancy is still sleeping. I think most everybody else is before the great breakfast. Took a walk to a neighborhood across from the old city called Yamin Moshe. It's where Montefiore's windmill is. And in the quietness of this morning, just looking at the beautiful, beautiful flowers that had fallen from their branches on Jerusalem stone, stone going up in that way, in the word that when you come to Israel, you are making an aliyah, you are rising up, whether you're a citizen or experiencing it as a Jew or any person of faith, it is quite remarkable. Our relationship as Jews who choose to live in America is vitally important to us in Israel. We strengthen one another, and my goodness, our 10 days in Israel will provide a deep well of sustenance from which we will draw, a relationship going both ways that God willing will continue to grow. Ken Yehi Ratzon, may it be God's will.